Extreme cold weather advisory in effect this morning.
You're a contractor. You have a contract.
All right, guys, come on. Let's do this.
A little snow and ice isn't stopping you. Not today, not any day. Shouldn't your flashing tape be working through it all, too? Only Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape's high-performance acrylic adhesive sticks, re-sticks, and stays stuck, even on the roughest surfaces in rain, snow, heat, and more. So you stay in control when it matters most. Show weather who's boss with Frog Tape Pro Grade Flashing Tape.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing and smashing that thumbs up. Download your favorite scary story on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. A shout out to my channel members and patrons. Now let's get spooky. My dad used to be a cop. He's been out of the force for about 5 years now. And while he's usually apprehensive about opening up about the old days, every now and then, he'll have one too many, and I'll come home to him sitting pissed drunk at the kitchen table. I'll say a quick hello, and he'll make an effort to open up about his experiences. Normally, I smile and nod while hastily making any excuse as to why I needed to head to bed. Last night, I decided to sit down with him. There's always been something I've been terrified of him bringing up, and I guess that's why I've never engaged on nights like the prior. However, I'm nearing my graduation from college and plan on moving out within the next month, so maybe that's why I sat down. I really wish I hadn't. For context, I'm going to back up some years. In the fall of 2012, I was a junior in high school. My main friend group consisted of four individuals, not counting myself: Peter, Clark, Ryan, and my best friend who I grew up with, Foster. The other three became closer to us around middle school, but me and Foster always remained a special bond, having known each other since we were young children. But in high school, we did everything together. Foster was the first to get his license and already had a car on standby for him. Chill as his parents were, they never tended to be the most responsible or vigilant guardians. They were actually fairly neglectful. As a result, the moment he got his car, the gang would sneak out every other weekend to hang out, drink a bit or smoke weed, you know, just being teenagers. The night everything went as south as it could have gone was supposed to be more of the same. I jerked away to the sound of my phone buzzing. Foster's name shone across my screen and a smile forced its way onto my face. "Thought you weren't feeling it tonight," I said when I picked up. "Change of plans," he replied. The sound of his voice gave me the vibe he wasn't in the best mood. "Well, you call everyone else?" "Just you and Ryan," he panted. "He said he's running over to your place, and I'll pick you up together as usual." After hanging up the phone, I quickly started getting dressed while trying to remain quiet enough to not wake my dad. Ryan lived a couple of minutes down the road from me, so he usually just walked down and we'd get picked up together. Once I was ready, I peeked out the window to see the silhouette of someone stalking beside the house. As the shadow grew closer, I raised the window as quietly as I could, hearing the shuffling of someone climbing up the side of the house to my second-story room. The window resided above the outside table on the deck, making it easy to hoist oneself onto the roof. A fist came out towards me and I quickly grabbed it. "The hell are you doing?" I quietly scowled. Ryan leaned forward and his pale face became illuminated by the lamp. "Sorry, man," he stammered. "Too focused, I guess. Thought the window might be closed." He carefully climbed through my window and stood up. "Did Foster sound off to you?" he whispered. "Yeah, actually," I replied. "Probably just got into trouble with his folks. You know that old story." "Well, yeah. They don't take anything seriously," said Ryan. "Look, his parents are cool and all, but they sometimes just feel like kids who had a kid. Remember that time they blacked out at the bar and just went to a hotel without telling him? He was like, what, 12 when that happened? If he had decided to call the cops, he would have been taken away." I sadly nodded. As I said earlier, his parents are chill, and as much as I love them, they have done many questionable things. I'm considered family, and I consider them as well, but that doesn't mean they haven't infuriated me with what Foster has put through at times. On the night Ryan is referring to, Foster called me and I talked him through the night. I kept telling him to just call the police, but he wouldn't. They came home the next morning and acted like it was no big deal. I guess when you have parents like that, you either have to grow up fast or sink, I said. Ryan nodded in agreement. We waited about another 15 minutes until the headlights of Foster's car could be seen through the trees. Ryan and I went through the window and quietly moved through the yard. Once we were in the car, Foster continued down the road. I positioned myself in the middle with Ryan to my right and Peter on my left. I tapped Foster on the arm. How we feeling tonight, buddy? I heard him quietly mumble something, but I couldn't make it out. Clark, in the passenger seat, turned to me a bit with his lips perched and shrugged. I leaned to Peter and whispered, Has Foster told you what's wrong? Something about his parents, he replied quietly. When he called me, I could hear his mom saying something as he hung up, like really quick. I don't know what she said, but it didn't sound very happy. I'm sure he'll tell us at the spot. The spot we hung out at was a clearing about 2 miles down the road from my house. We always drove up about 500 feet from the tree line and left the headlights on to see. With the radio quietly buzzing, we made our way there as no real conversation started. After parking, we all got out and Peter was the first to speak. So, did anyone bring weed? Not gonna need it, said Foster as he popped the trunk. We gathered behind the car to see him tear into one of two full cases of beer. Jesus, Foster, I said. I usually don't understand how your parents don't notice you taking a few beers from the fridge, but they'll definitely notice this. Oh, that's not all, Austin, he replied, and then he promptly grabbed a fifth of vodka from a paper bag. And FYI, I didn't take this from the house. I actually got it from the liquor store. Holy shit, exclaimed Ryan. You got a fake ID? Or did you get somebody to buy it for you? Foster said nothing but smirked a bit. He then got a few small plastic shot glasses out of the same bag and began setting them on the back of the now closed trunk to pour them. Ryan turned to me and mouthed, Did he steal them? I shrugged. I'm not a rat, but if you remember from earlier, my dad was a cop at the time. If Foster did steal all of this, it did make me a little uncomfortable being in the presence of it. Then again, I was 16 at the time sneaking out to drink alcohol, so... Let's not worry about it, he said, pouring the shots. Let's just drink, and when I'm loosened up, I'll stop being a mysterious asshole. I'll take a few beers, but leave me out of the shots, said Clark. I suppose one of us need to stay sober enough to drive. Since I live across from Foster, I could just drive you home last and walk to my place. Foster abided his request and left one empty shot glass. The first 20 minutes or so were mostly uneventful, so I'll skip ahead. Halfway through the second beer, and with 2 shots of vodka in me, I was feeling pretty good. Foster had a Spotify playlist shuffling from his car as we laid on the hood looking up. I walked over and leaned on the hood next to him. So? I said. What's going on, man? He sighed and leaned up. Well, remember earlier when we were talking and I had to tell you I wasn't in the mood to go out? He said, lowering the music volume. I nodded. Everyone started to come closer to listen, but Ryan continued walking out of the light to the right of the car. Gotta piss. Promise I'm listening, he said drunkenly. Foster chuckled a bit, which seemed like he was feeling at least a little better. Well, I told my mom that I wasn't going to be home until after midnight, because I was hanging out at your place, which was obviously a lie. I was going to the campgrounds to hang out with Jessica.
Hey-o!
Said Peter, taking a huge swig of beer.
That's my boy!
He reached a fist out to Foster, who only gave him an annoyed look. We left earlier because she got a call about her grandmother. She was in the hospital.
Okay, doke,
Peter said awkwardly, and resumed sipping his drink. "So obviously, I got home much earlier than expected," Foster continued. "When I got there, I heard some commotion coming from my room. I whipped the door open, only to find my mom riding some dude on my bed." I was mid-sip when he said this, and I nearly spit my beer all over me.
"What the fuck on your bed?"
Ryan shouted from the shadows.
"How long does it take you to piss?"
yelled Clark to the direction his voice came from.
I can hear you guys talking, and I got a nervous bladder."
"Wait, stop," I said, whipping my mouth, cutting off Ryan.
"You caught your mom cheating on your dad? Did you tell him?"
Foster sighed. "Didn't have to." He took a sip of his beer. He was sitting in the chair, butt-ass naked, watching them. I got off the chair and walked away for a second to collect my thoughts.
"Damn,"
muttered Peter. I didn't even know what to say. In the silence, the song changed. "Don't Forgive Me" by Red Hot Chili Peppers began playing. This would be the last song played that night. Clark shook his head in disbelief.
"So, what happened next?"
"Naturally, I wanted to fight everyone," he said. "But I didn't really want to touch a naked guy, let alone my naked parents. So I just stormed to the back porch and sat down. About 10 minutes later, my mom came out in a robe. You believe that? In a robe. She didn't even have the decency to get fully dressed. She apologized over and over again, but I couldn't even look at her. Then Dad came out."
"In a robe?"
interrupted Peter.
"No, worse. Just basketball shorts and nothing else. Sick fuck was still kinda, ugh."
He chugged the rest of his beer and threw it besides the car.
"So, they finally confessed that they have been doing an open relationship for about the past year. But that's not all. Apparently, even though they never had one-on-one sex with other people, they had been in orgies before."
"Who tells their son this?" I also asked if that's why they never came home that one night when I was 12, when they stayed at that hotel without calling. And of course, that's exactly why. They could have just lied and said no, but of course, that was why. He was getting more frustrated, and I could see tears welling up in his eyes.
"Why my parents, huh? If people want to do that, whatever, but why my parents? Hell, why on my bed? Some sick frickin' fetish? I barely spoke to them after. I just left. I just couldn't believe it. Why my parents?"
We all froze. It took a minute to realize what had happened. A voice came from the woods, mocking what Foster was saying. It was raspy, barely above a whisper, but still loud enough to be heard over the music, which was already at a fairly low volume. All of us looked in front of us, towards the tree line, but couldn't really see.
"Barely spoke."
"Oh shit," said Clark,
who was the closest to the front. He backed up, not taking his eyes off of where the voice came from.
"Did anyone else see that?"
"See what?" I said.
"Something moved, just beyond the headlights," he replied.
I strained my eyes, but still couldn't see what he was talking about.
"I'm gonna kill him," he said, sliding off the car. "It's Ryan trying to mess with us."
"I don't know, man," said Peter. "That really didn't sound like him."
"Trust me, it's him. Gonna teach that fucker there's a time and place for this shit."
Foster angrily stomped forward and disappearing into the darkness. I could hear him pushing branches out of the way. Clark turned to me and Peter.
"That was not Ryan," he said again.
I turned to where Ryan had gone to pee.
"Hey, Ryan,"
I said.
"You still out there, buddy?"
Nothing but silence came back to me. Turning back to them, we each just stared at one another. Then, some shuffling came from where I'd spoke to. I backed up, becoming closer to Clark and Peter. The sounds grew closer as my heart pounded, not knowing what I was about to see. After a few moments, Ryan appeared looking at his phone.
Sorry, after I pissed, I had to read something off my phone and sorta zoned out. Why y'all looking at me like that? We were all standing close together, staring at him in silence. He looked at the hood of the car and then back to us. Where's Foster? I turned to where Foster had walked off. Ryan came close and stood next to Peter. So, what's going on?
Shh, I said. Just one second, we'll explain.
Some more shuffling came from the woods, and then a sound. It was like someone having trouble to breathe. It started quiet, then started to ramp up quickly. Then as soon as it had started, it cut off with a loud thump as if someone was being punched. Then something hit the forest floor. Grass began rustling as I heard the snapping of twigs. These sounds got fainter as they went on. At this point, the song coming from Foster's car began skipping. Clark turned to it.
What? Foster is connecting through Bluetooth? If it's skipping, then that means... Why is he getting so far away?
I walked to the car and got to the driver's side. The small screen indicated it was still connected. It skipped a few more times and then went silent. I cranked the volume all the way up to see if I could hear anything. But then the screen showed. No Bluetooth connected. I raised up out of the car, leaving the door open, and walked back to them. His phone disconnected. I'm gonna go look for him. All of a sudden, something started to run through the woods towards us. The three of us backed up to the car, as what sounded like large feet pounding against the ground grew closer. My heart skyrocketed once more as a loud whoosh shot came from the trees in a gust of wind that nearly knocked us over. A few branches broke and fell to the ground.
What the hell? Shouted Ryan. What the hell happened while I was...
The music from the car became blasting back at full volume, making us scream and clutch our ears. I quickly ran to the open door and reached in to turn off the music, but as soon as I did, something from above fell on the hood of the car with a loud bang. The airbag shot out and I fell backwards as the other three began to scream. The airbag barely caught the side of my head, but it was enough to leave me briefly disoriented. The next few seconds seemed like forever. I looked down and rubbed the broken glass off of myself. My legs felt too weak to stand, so I painstakingly crawled around to the door and put my hand on the car to prop myself up. My fingers touched something, so I shifted my hand forward and I was met with the palm of a human hand. I yelped and fell back once more. While lying there, Clark could be seen sitting up from where he presumably had fallen. He looked to the car in utter shock and, with his hand shaking, raised one in gesture to the hood.
It's Foster.
I got my movement back and shot up. I turned to the hood of the car and came closer. I could see there was definitely someone laying on the car, but there wasn't enough light to see much else. I reached into my pocket without inverting my vision and pulled out my phone. Clicking on the flashlight button, I got a bit closer and illuminated something that paralyzed me where I stood. Foster's unblinking eyes stared lifeless into the sky. His hand, the one I touched, seemed to be barely attached to his arm. Nothing but a bit of flesh and tendons connected it to his arm, which seemed to be badly broken, the bone jutting out of his elbow. His right arm and the lower part of his left leg were completely gone. A bloody nub and torn flesh serving as grim reminders of what should be there. The thing that confused me was his throat. It had a deep gash cut into it, but not in an animalistic way like the rest of his injuries. It was precise, surgical, done by someone or something that knew they were slitting a throat. I heard gagging coming behind me and turned to see Ryan and Peter throwing up. Clark had just begun to get up, still shaking. I noticed then that they all had droplets of blood on them. I guess it fell briefly from Foster's wounds while I leaned into the car to turn off the music. When Clark stood up, he walked over to me. I made a move to shine my light back to Foster, but he stopped me.
"Don't," he said. "I saw his shoe. I know it's him. I don't want to see more. Let's get the hell out of here."
At that,
Clark bolted away, followed by me. I could hear both Peter and Ryan beginning running with us. Even after what I had just saw, the following minutes running back to my house would be the most terrifying thing I had ever experienced. When we had gotten a bit closer to my house, I broke off into the woods to cut through.
"What are you doing?" yelled Ryan. "Slow down a bit. That's where that frickin' thing is, man."
I didn't stop or turn. I just kept running, seeing the outside lights of my house, but I was still a ways away. Didn't know if I was making a bad decision or not, but seeing those lights gave me hope. Then, as I got a bit further, it dawned on me that my house would be the quickest to get to. What if they didn't make it? I turned to my right and could still see them a bit, running on the road through the trees.
"Hey!" I shouted. "Go to my house, it's quite—"
A bunch of bark flew off the tree I was running next to, and something hit my shoulder. I fell and rolled into the dirt for a few seconds before abandoning my idea and continued my run. I could see the silhouette of trees now through the moonlight, and through some of the light from my house. Started to weave through them instead of just running forward. I heard movement to my left and I could feel something growing close. Without thinking, I just dove and rolled on the ground. I felt something fly right past me as I stood up and continued running. Finally, I bursted through the tree line leading to my house. As I ran, I heard more branches behind me break. Whatever was chasing me was getting closer. I threw myself up the stairs to the deck, and the moment that I jumped onto the table, I tried to raise the window to my room. I didn't get it high enough and hit my head on the bottom of the window. I nearly fell back and was able to catch myself on the bottom of the frame. I frantically pulled myself through, but as I fumbled into my room, I got my foot caught on the curtain and yanked it down as I fell. I quickly stood up and slammed my window shut. I held myself on the wall for a moment and breathed quickly, trying to catch my breath. After a couple moments, I heard Dad stomping to my room. I quickly jumped into my bed and threw my cover over my shoulder, prompting my eyes shut. I heard my door jerk open and then silence. I still had my eyes closed, expecting Dad to either try to wake me up or just leave me, but nothing ever happened. I heard nothing but could still feel his presence in my doorway. After a few moments of silence, I slowly began to open my eyes to view through my eyelashes. I could just barely see Dad standing in the doorway, but seeing the moonlight was casting too far for me to give him a clear view of my face. I opened my eyes more and saw Dad slowly raise his hand. He moved it back and forth slowly and then stopped. I'm not really sure how long the next little bit was. All I know is that Dad stood and watched me in bed for way too long. I finally closed my eyes and tried to sleep, but I couldn't until I heard the door close and I felt I was alone. The next morning didn't feel real. I sent a message out to everyone to see if they had all gotten home, and eventually, they all replied, which was a huge relief to me. Dad ended up leaving after a call. I knew what it was, but didn't say anything. Over the course of the next week, this is what was learned. Foster was found by a hunter around 7 a.m. Once police were on the scene, the entire area was roped off. The alcohol in the car was traced back to the liquor store down the road from Foster's. Apparently, he stole it by breaking the window to the basement storage. I put on about as good as a performance as I could, as my dad told me. I was devastated I lost Foster, but I didn't want Dad knowing that I was there. Now that it was over, the pain of losing my oldest friend hit me like a truck. The police, however, tweaked the story a bit as to not cause a commotion in our town by declaring it a bear attack and not publicizing all of Foster's wounds. I assumed the hunter was paid off to not say what he thought it looked like when he had found him. When we all returned to school, our dynamic immediately seemed off between the four of us. We had this huge secret we couldn't tell and felt unsure if anyone would even believe us anyways. For a bit, I thought at least one of us would have been brought in for questioning, but no one ever was. In addition,
I have a crippling fear of the woods now. I think the police investigated other supposed attacks done by whatever had been with us that night, because Dad made it a rule not to go into the woods alone, but that didn't matter. I haven't been in there alone or with anyone else since. It never was much of an issue before, but I replaced my torn curtain immediately the next day, as staring out into the trees just paralyzes me now. Clark, Ryan, and Peter are still close to me to this day. But ever since Foster died, we've never really quite been the same. I have never even openly talked about it since. Until last night. I sat across from Dad with a knot in my chest, waiting to see what he had to say. He gripped his beer bottle in front of him on the table, staring absent-mindedly at the tip. For a moment, he stood, walked over to the fridge and grabbed two more beers, while throwing the empty one away. After opening both, he sat back down and slid one to me.
What?
I said. I want to talk to you about Foster, he said, ignoring me. He took a gulp of his beer and continued. Just so you know, I'm well aware that you guys snuck out from time to time. I figured as long as you got to school and didn't do anything dangerous, what's the harm? I knew you were a good kid. I thought if I came down too hard on you, you'd just sneak out twice as much and do more dangerous things. You never got hurt and always did well in school, and I thought it might be good for you to have a bit of freedom so you don't go all crazy when you do have all of it. Yeah, I knew you snuck out. I also know that you were with Foster the night he died. My heart skipped a beat. I reached out and took a sip of my beer.
How did you know that? I mean, that I was with Foster?
He didn't reply immediately. He stared at me and with a sad look on his face for a moment before taking another drink and continuing. I heard a loud crash in your room. I figured you had just gotten home from doing whatever. But then I heard something else. His voice broke a bit at the end. It sounded like something running on the roof, but the sound itself seemed to be coming from inside of the house, not on top. I ran to your room, and when I burst open your door, I saw it.
You're lying, I said. That thing wasn't in the room with me. There's no way.
You're correct, he said, exasperated. It wasn't in your room. It was hanging on to the house, looking in through the window. I didn't really know how to react to this new information. My mouth slowly hung open as I waited for him to continue. All I saw was the silhouette of what I thought was a man. But then I noticed that it had these round things behind it. It then dawned on me that they were like wings. The worst part of it was its eyes. Those huge, bright yellow eyes. It stared at me, and I just remembered not being able to move. I didn't know what to do. If I should wake you up or not, it just felt like an eternity, not even sure if I even blinked. Then, its wings slowly moved out, and it backed away from the window, just floating there. It lowered its arms and straightened its legs a bit more. I was confused at first, but then I realized it was copying me. His voice broke again. He reached out and took another gulp of his beer. When he sat it down, he wiped his eyes, which caused me to notice that he had been tearing up a bit. It wasn't making any noise, he said. Somehow, it let go of the wall and just floated back without actually flying. It just made no noise. I raised my hand up, and it did the same thing. I moved it back and forth. It did the same, Dad finished. I took a large swig of my beer. I was awake, I whispered. I never knew why you stood there for so long, and now I wish I still didn't. I'm not done, Austin. I looked up at him. He was staring at me with a determined look. He seemed less drunk when I had got there, as if talking about this is sobering him up a little bit. I didn't leave your room until I saw it fly away. When I left later that morning, I got some trail cameras and put them up around the property. I only watched them once. That's all that I needed.
I leaned forward in my chair.
What did you see?
After the first night, I woke up early in the morning to check the footage. The only camera that caught anything was the one that I had pulled out of the dead tree next to the creek. At the start of the video, there was a person, a naked man facing away from the camera. He walked forward and then backwards to where he had started. He then looked like he was mimicking shaking hands, and then his voice began shaking. Then his shoulder blades opened. These fleshy-looking wings came out of the slits of his skin, seemed to change form to make it more inhuman. I mean, the video was black and white, but the change was very noticeable. Once the wings were fully out, it flew away. I never looked at any of them ever again. I knew I was a cop, but nothing can prepare you for that. I think the worst part is that it seemed to like practicing human mannerisms to blend in. At that, he turned his bottle up and finished his beer. "I'm sorry about Foster," he said, "but I'm happy it wasn't you. I'm also sorry if it seemed weird that I told you this. Perhaps it is. I don't know." Leaving the empty bottle on the table, he stood up and made his way to the chairs. Once the top was reached, he turned to me one last time. "Good night, Austin. I love you." Even though he went to bed, I stayed in my seat for a while processing what he had just told me. He definitely had wanted to tell me this for a long time. Even so, I have a feeling that he'll regret he did in the morning. I thought about the past few years, and how lucky I am that thing didn't find me a second time, or did it. I went upstairs to my room, and for the first time since that night, I drew back the curtain. The tree line could be seen, just barely illuminated by the full moon. Gazing into the night, I wondered of the likelihood of something to be gazing back at me. Whatever that thing is, it wanted to look and act like us. That much is obvious. Could it be amongst my hometown looking as human as what we see in the mirror? Or is it still out there, lurking behind the trees, shrouded by the forest, just waiting, watching, practicing?